Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with Jonah Flees, as we pick up in Jonah chapter 1, verse 3. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
It is interesting that several years later, in this very same port city of Joppa, as Peter was on the rooftop of the house of Simon the Tanner, that he saw this sheet in a vision let down from heaven, tied with the corners with all manner of beast and creeping things on it. And the Lord said to Peter, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." And when Peter objected, saying, "Lord, I've never eaten anything that was unclean or common," God said, "Don't call that common which I have cleansed." And after this thing happened three times, Peter wondered, "What in the world does this mean?" And the Lord spoke to him and said, "There are some men now down at the gate inquiring for you. Go with them and don't ask any questions. I'll tell you what to say." And there in Joppa is where Peter was called to take the gospel to the Gentiles. Interesting how things always seem to come back. It was to Joppa that Jonah ran to catch a ship to escape preaching to the Gentiles. It was at Joppa that the Lord called Peter and said, "Go to the Gentiles." And the door of the gospel was open to the Gentiles as God dealt with Peter there in Joppa. Jonah was arising and seeking to flee from the presence of the Lord, heading for Tarshish. Biblical scholars are divided as to the location of Tarshish. Some say it is a part of Spain. Others say it is England. The preponderance of scholars seem to favor England. Wherever Tarshish was, it was the furthest outpost of the known world at that time. It was the jumping off. You can't go any farther than Tarshish from the civilized world. It was the end. It was as far as you can go. Beyond Tarshish lay that wild, boisterous Atlantic. And out there somewhere, that precipice, that chasm that just the ships dropped off into oblivion. No ships ever came back from their voyages on the Atlantic. They surely must have gone over the edge of the world someplace and disappeared. So Tarshish was as far as you dared to go, and that's where Jonah was heading. "I'm going to get as far away from God as I can. I'll head for Tarshish to hide from the call of God, from the presence of the Lord." Now, there are many people who do make the mistake of attempting to localize God, as though God dwells in one place as over against another place, as though God dwells here in the sanctuary more so than in your home. "Oh, I wanted to come to the church to pray so I could be close to God. I like to go up to the mountains to pray because I'm so much closer to God, 5,000 feet. As though God, you know, is somewhere off there in the vast universe. And of course, better yet, if you can get in a balloon or in a U-2 or something, you know, get closer to God. Not so. God fills every place in this vast universe, or in any other universe that exists. The astrophysicists are talking about some interesting things in our universe. One of the interesting things that the astrophysicist speaks of is the black holes. Now, there are some interesting theories about these black holes. You see, all matter is made up of expanded atoms, which are made up of electrons rotating around the protons in the nucleus of an atom. But there is much more space than solid material in atoms. So that if the proton of the hydrogen atom was the size of a basketball, the electron that revolves around it would be some 3,000 miles away, to give you an idea of the amount of space that is in the atom of hydrogen. There is the proton, the electron revolving around it, but quite a vast space in between in comparison to the size of the proton and the electron. So that they tell us that there is more space in solid matter or in material than solid matter. There is this space. In fact, they say that if all of the atoms in your body would collapse so that there was no space, just the solid material of the protons and electrons, you would be the size of a microscopic speck of dust. So if suddenly all of the atoms in your body would collapse, we'd say, hey, where'd they go? And we'd have to get an electron microscope to find you. But this interesting thing is that this little microscopic speck of dust would weigh the same as you weigh. So you go to blow that dust off the table and it doesn't move. Now, they say if they started to compress the atoms in the earth, of course we know the Einstein's theory of relativity and then also of gravity, E equals mc squared. Now, they say that if you would start compressing the earth, you know, we are 8,000 miles in diameter, so that you are 4,000 miles from the center of the mass of the earth. Therefore, 4,000 miles away from the center of the mass, you weigh whatever the scales tell you you weigh. So let's say you ladies weigh 130 pounds or 125 or whatever, and us fellows, I'm not going to tell you what I weigh, but we weigh around 200, plus or minus. Because we are 4,000 miles away from the center of the earth, the center of the mass of the earth. And there is this pull towards the center of the mass. I'm being pulled towards the center of the earth. And that pull upon the mass of my body equals what I weigh. Now, if we would start compressing the earth so that it was only 4,000 miles in diameter instead of the 8,000 miles in diameter, as you are now only 2,000 miles away from the center of the mass, the earth would still weigh the same as it weighs now, but your weight would go up tremendously because you are closer now to the center of the mass. And being closer to the center of the mass, your weight would now increase to where you would weigh several tons. Now, if you continued to compress the earth until, say, it was the size of a baseball, then you would be so close to the center of the mass that you would weigh over 100 million tons. Now, if you continued to compress the earth, you finally compress it so much that you create a black hole and the whole thing disappears. Because now the center of gravity is so powerful that not even light can escape it. So all of the light now is going inward because it is being drawn by this powerful gravity. And so now you have a black hole. And you pass this point in the compression to where the center of gravity becomes so great, or the power of gravity is so great that not even light can escape it. And that is the theory for the black holes that we have in the universe. Now, if you would step into this black hole, according to some of the astrophysicists, you would enter into a whole new universe within this small black hole. You come out into a vast new universe in which If you would take the objects in that universe and begin to compress them, you could make other black holes in that universe. And when you've created the black hole, step into it, and you'd enter out into another vast universe. Sounds like science fiction, doesn't it? But that's what the astrophysicists are telling us about these black holes. Now, you see, in order for us to see things, we have to have light. And what we see is reflected light off of the object. We don't see the object, but the light that is reflected by that object is what we behold. But if the gravity is so powerful that light doesn't reflect, but it is drawn inward, the light can't escape, then this creates the black hole. And it's created by the compression of atoms to the point that the center of gravity is so powerful within them that even light can't escape. So, Jonah is talking about escaping from the presence of God. But you can't. If you would enter into one of these black holes and enter into another whole new universe, you'd find God was there. And he fills that whole universe. Jesus said, in my Father's house, there are many mansions. In my Father's house. How vast is the Father's house? Vast enough that there are many mansions within it. Those mansions could even be universes within the black holes of the black holes of the black holes. Paul the Apostle, when talking with the Epicurean philosophers there in the Areopagus, said unto them, I perceive that you are very religious, for as I have been walking through your streets, I've observed all of the altars that you have made to the gods. And on one corner, I saw an altar, and the inscription was to the unknown God. This is the God I'd like to talk to you about, because he's the one who's created the heaven and the earth and everything that is in them. And in him, we live, we move, we have our being. I'm surrounded by God. I can't escape God. Wherever I am, I'm surrounded by God. The psalmist said, if I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I descend into hell, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and flee to the uttermost parts of the sea, even there you lead me. I can't get away from God. I'm surrounded by God. And thus it is wrong for you to think of God in a local situation. Now, when I was in Sunday school, the Sunday school teacher taught us that it was evil to go to shows. And they told us the story of the little boy who went by the theater and saw on the marquee the show that was playing. And, oh, he wanted to go in and see it. And he was tempted to go in and see it. But he knew that, you know, the Lord wouldn't want him in there. And if the rapture would come, if he were in there, would surely not be taken. And I had that boogeyman over my head when I was a child. And so he said, Lord, if you don't mind waiting outside, I'll be with you in an hour and a half. As though we can leave the presence of the Lord, or as though we do leave the presence of the Lord when we turn our backs upon God. Not so. I'm always surrounded by God no matter where I am. And I think that this is an important concept that we need to be aware of. I don't escape God. When Ben-Hadad was questioning his generals because of the apparent security leak, because his general said to him, listen, we're true to you. We're not leaking out this security information. The problem is there's a prophet over there in Israel, and you can't even talk to your wife in bed, but what he doesn't know what you're saying to her. Now, how did the prophet know? Because God was revealing it to him. You see, you don't escape God. I don't care where you are, you cannot escape God. Now, it was a deceptive lie for Jonah to think that he could escape God. It was a deceptive lie to think that he would be better off running from God and running from the call of God. That was a deception and that was a lie. Many people live under that same delusion. I would be better off if I could just escape the will of God for my life. I can determine what is best for me better than God can determine. I know what's better for the people of God than God does. If I go to Nineveh and preach the gospel to those Gentiles, if they believe and repent, then God, being the softy that he is, being merciful as he is, will probably forgive them and not destroy them. And if they're not destroyed, then they're apt to destroy our people. I'm not going. I'm heading for Tarshish. Well, I'm going to get as far away from Nineveh as is humanly possible. And so he went down to Joppa to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And he got a ship and paid the fare, went down in the hold to flee from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord sent out a great wind in the sea. And there was a mighty tempest in the sea, so that the ship was being broken. Then the mariners, the sailors, were afraid, and they cried every man unto his God. And they cast forth the cargo that was in the ship on into the sea in order to lighten it. But Jonah was gone down in the sides of the ship, and he lay and was fast asleep. Now, people are troubled because of the miraculous aspects of the book of Jonah. But usually the part that troubles them most is the fact that he was swallowed by the great fish. But in reality, here are the evidences of God's hand even before we ever get to the fish. The storm that came up was sent from God. A miraculous kind of a storm in that God sent it. But then Jonah, able to sleep through the storm, has to be some kind of a miracle also. You ever been out in a boat in a storm, being tossed down in the ship, fast asleep, so that the shipmaster came to him and said, what do you mean by this, O sleeper? Arise and call on your God, if so be that God will think upon us and we perish not. And they said every one to his fellow, come on, let's cast lots, that we may know for whose cause this evil is upon us. So they cast lots, and another miracle, the lot fell on Jonah. So they said unto him, tell us, we pray thee, why has this evil come upon us? What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? And Jonah said unto them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear Yahweh, the God of heaven, which has made the sea and the dry land. I fear the great God, Yahweh, the creator of the universe. Francis Schaeffer says that the term God is being so commonly used by people today without definition that as we speak of God, we need to become more definitive, and we probably should say the living God, the creator of the heaven and the earth, so that we define to people the God that we are talking about, because there are so many gods and people use the term God so freely and so liberally to express almost anything. So here he defines Yahweh, who made the sea and the land. Then were the men exceedingly afraid, and they said unto him, why have you done this? For the men knew that he had fled from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. He told them that he was trying to flee from the presence of God, from the call of God to go to the Gentiles and preach to them. Then said they unto him, what shall we do unto you, that the sea may be calm? For the sea wrought and was tempestuous. And he said unto them, just throw me overboard, and the sea will be calm. For I know that it is for my sake that this great tempest is come upon you. Nevertheless, because he had paid his fare, and it wasn't polite to throw over fare-paying passengers, the men rowed hard to bring the ship to land, but they could not, for the sea wrought and was tempestuous against them. Wherefore they cried unto Yahweh and said, we beseech thee, O Yahweh, we beseech thee, let us not perish for this man's life, and don't lay upon us innocent blood, for thou, O Yahweh, has done as has pleased thee. God, don't blame us. We're going to throw this guy over. We don't want to perish for him, but God, don't blame us for throwing him over. Because you're the one that has brought all of this because of him. So, God, have mercy on us when we throw him overboard.
We'll continue with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Jonah on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Jonah 1 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May God bless you and keep his hand upon your life to guide, to strengthen, to bless. May he minister to your life in such a way that you'll be very conscious of the presence of God. May he just burst upon the scene, and may you just recognize his nearness and his grace and his love and just be overwhelmed by the goodness of God. May the Lord bless, watch over, and keep you through Jesus Christ. Amen.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
The 1960s became one of the most colorful periods in American history. The counterculture was dropping out and turning on. The Summer of Love was the stage for many dramas of change. And the most popular musical group in the world was singing, All You Need Is Love. But one man in Southern California was reaching out with the answer, and the truth began to set people free. Author and pastor Chuck Smith began to share the love of Jesus Christ with a generation that was looking for love in all the wrong places. Now, some 40 years later, the gospel of love is still changing lives. In his book, simply titled, Love, The More Excellent Way, Pastor Chuck Smith expounds upon the love that can change your life now and forever.
For more information on how to obtain your copy, visit a bookstore nearest you, or call 1-800-272-WORD, or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. That's thewordfortoday.org.